We got Mike Rupp on this week talking Rangers and the Trouba trade, Penguins and Leafs, and Sean and I argue over the new Avalanche goalies. All that and more coming up on the NHL at the Rink podcast.
NHL at the Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast presented by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, I'm back in New Jersey. It's cold here. It was not cold at the Board of Governors meetings. It was nice. Standing at the Old Palm Beach, right on the beach, living the life, man.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Although, there's a lot of people I could be thanking, but I'm not going to do that. But no, listen. You know how these meetings go, right? You and I, not necessarily Board of Governors, but GMs for sure, and some Board of Governors. You and I used to cover a lot of these meetings together, Sean. And remember the times we would go down to these meetings, and it was like the sky was falling, right? Like something was there was big news, right? Significant news. Maybe not, again, maybe not so much at the Board of Governors, but it certainly bled over to that level, right? Bled up to that level, if you will. My takeaway from this meeting, Monday and Tuesday, things are good. And I've had that takeaway from the past several meetings. So, I mean, yes, this is an NHL-sponsored podcast, and we work for the NHL, so that's obvious. But I don't know how anyone could have a takeaway that isn't the same leaving that meeting. Things are good, Sean. Revenue's at $6.6 billion. That's the projected. The cap, 5% will go up. It could be 92.4 at least. At least 92.4 million next year. There's no Arizona talk anymore. Instead, there's just this excitement over Utah, right? That's the takeaway. Things are good right now. You almost want to knock on wood.
Well, I'll knock on my head. That's close enough. things are great. And you know, I think a big part of it is just the fact, you know, I just did some planning for the Four Nations, you know, and it's a joint effort between us and the NHLPA, and it's as good a relationship as it's been for as long as I can remember. And I think that leads to everything else being good, because there's a commonality and there's a common goal that everyone wants to accomplish. So you're able to do good business when you're able to look ahead.
Yeah, listen, Gary Bettman talked about it. The relationship with the NHLPA is very strong. He and Marty Walsh are tight. Ron Hainsey, they have a great relationship with him, too, as the assistant to the executive director, who's Marty Walsh. Bill Daly, obviously, involved there. And they're going to begin CBA talks for the next CBA sometime early next year, early in 2025, February, probably. The CBA doesn't expire until September of 2026. And in a perfect world, in an ideal world, they want to have it done by the time Gary Bettman addresses the media at the Stanley Cup Final, the 2025 Stanley Cup Final, not the 2026 Stanley Cup Final. That really tells you where they're at right now in the relationship. And I agree with you, Sean. I mean, it kind of all goes together. And the Four Nations face-off is a perfect example of that, the working relationship between the two sides, because it is a joint effort between the two sides.
Yeah, and like I said, with peace comes prosperity, right? We've learned that our whole lives. There's my little history lesson for you for today, Dan. When you're not peaceful, you're not putting all your efforts into bettering yourself, right? You're worried about other things and down the road. So I think it's all a reflection. You know, Utah obviously has been a huge success, and it would be hard to find something to pick at.
Yeah.
Nobody did.
I mean, there was obviously a little bit of, you know, Michael Anlauer, the Ottawa Senators owner, made a little bit of noise, but that was quieted down pretty quick. One thing that was interesting was coming out of the meeting on Monday, Ryan Smith of Utah was one of the, you know, this was their first time at the big Board of Governors meeting, right? They've been to some other smaller ones, but this was their first time at the big one. And Nick Katsunika did a story with Utah, with Chris Armstrong, their president, and, you know, everything that they're excited about and they've got going on there. But Ryan Smith showed me and a few other reporters sort of, it's on his phone, a build-out of what the arena is going to look like over time, it's going to be like it's going to end up being a great arena for hockey, and you're going to feel the way he showed it and the way it looked, you're going to feel like you're right on top of the action there too. So it's not there yet, but that's the plan, and that is the plan also to have that's where they're going to play the hockey, Delta Center, and it's going to be fully done obviously then, but that's where they're going to play the hockey at the Olympics when they go in, what is that going to be now, 2032, I believe, would be the next Olympics in Salt Lake, if I'm correct. No, I'm wrong on that. 2034. 2034 would be the Olympics in Salt Lake. If the Olympics were this year, it would be 2032, but not the case. But it was really interesting that the structure of how they're doing it and the phases that they're going to do and how they're going to let it lie for a little bit, just let it go for a little bit, and then do a big build when they don't have a lot of activity. Because, yeah, I mean, it's an NBA and NHL arena. There's a lot of activity that goes on there. But there's so much excitement in Utah right now for what's happening there.
Yeah, and now the product on the ice just has to catch up, right? I think, you know, you've seen snippets of it, but it hasn't been the jump that everybody hoped it would be, I don't think. After last year and all the turmoil and everything else and their ability to still stay in the race, I think a lot of people, you know, had them being in the top eight. I thought they had a chance to do that. And they flirted with it, but they haven't been able to have that consistency to stay there at this point. And that's the last step.
Yeah, that is. They're not a young team anymore, but they have a lot of young players that are still developing into impact players. By the way, Mike Rupp, who does a lot of great work with the NHL Network, former NHL player, Mike Rupp's going to be joining us. We talked to him for this podcast, and you know, we talk a lot about the Penguins. Rupper was actually in Pittsburgh when we did the interview. He's working the game in studio, Penguins Canadiens. We talked Rangers with him, Leafs, dove into a lot of different things, so that interview is coming up. We did not talk Los Angeles Kings with Mike Rupp, Sean. So let's talk Kings now. They've won 6 games in a row, and they've had 3 goalies in those 6 games as they enter the Prudential Center tonight to play the New Jersey Devils. To me, they're still kind of like, how are they doing it? You know what I mean? Like that's, I look at the Los Angeles Kings and nothing stands out. Like nothing stands out. But they're managing to get it done. I guess the one thing that would stand out of that's right there is the 2.54 goals against per game this season, right? Because if you're giving up 2.5 goals per game in this league, you're winning a lot of hockey games. So their defense has been quality. But you're talking about Darcy Kemper and David Rittich, and even Eric Portillo got a start, you know, in this 6-game winning streak. Their special teams are not that good. 16% on the power play, 80% on the PK. They're giving up few shots, though. They're not giving up a lot, and they're not giving up a lot of goals, and that's how you win a lot of games in this league. But does anything like jump out at you about the Los Angeles Kings?
Yeah, there's a few things. One is you talk about how good their defense is and how they're not giving up a lot of shots, and their best defenseman is sitting on the shelf in Drew Doughty. And right. Has been all year. So, you know, the fact that they're able to do this without him certainly says something. And then I don't know, maybe you take it for granted, but Anze Kopitar with 32 points, 28 games into the season, doesn't jump at you?
No, it doesn't, because I do take it for granted.
But that's not him.
Well, he's
that's point not
per
him.
Game, point per game guy. You would, you know, he's been a point per game guy. I don't have his stats right in front of me right now, but I think point per game. The fact that he's doing it at what, 37 years old? With the mileage that he's got on his big body, that is impressive. So, yeah, that jumps out for sure. The fact they're doing it without Doughty jumps out. Their goals against jumps out. I guess all of that does, but still, you know, there's nothing. You look at some of the other top teams, and you're like, you can easily find the identity, or you can easily find the star power. It's not so easy to find in L.A., but except they're just successful. However, let's not forget, Sean, they were successful through December last year, too, right? Last season, too. And by the end of January, their coach got fired. So you do kind of have to take it and say, hold on, let's see if they can plow through this second quarter of the season and get through into the second half of the season.
Yeah, because history's a huge part of it, right? And we talk about that, you know, with the Buffalo Sabres. We've talked about it for years. What's going to happen, right? And now it's happening again. They've lost 8 games in a row. This is an annual thing for them.
That's amazing,
at some point,
isn't it?
And it's whatever steps they've taken forward have been erased at this point. So when you think about the Kings from last year, you do worry a little bit about that history. I don't know if it's the same. I think they have a different type of DNA now. I think there's more of a belief. But the proof is going to be in the pudding, and that hasn't been made yet.
Can we go to Buffalo? Because I'm glad you brought it up. Like, I'm upset by this. You know, like, it happens every year. When's this going to stop happening? How is this going to stop happening? This is multiple coaches that they've gone through where the same thing has happened. It's not the coach. It's not. They can't figure it out. They go through this stretch every year, an 8-game losing streak after the quarter mark of the season. It happens all the time, and it kills their season. This team can go on a great run now, and it's playing catch-up. The only thing salvaging the Buffalo Sabres season right now, Sean, is the middle of the East right now is really so mushy because teams like the Lightning and the Rangers and the Bruins have been so inconsistent, right? But all three of those teams you would trust well over the Buffalo Sabres at this point to figure it out. I mean, you're playing at home. You can't win a home game. You got the Rangers come into your building on a Wednesday night, and they're struggling, and you don't score until there's about 5 minutes to go in the game, and you make a game of it, but you lose 3-2. Sean, it upsets me with the Sabres because I want that market so badly to have a team that it can believe in. Instead, you just wait for the brown bags over people's heads again.
Well, I don't know that that's what you're waiting for. And I think the hard thing is you see the signs, right? Like, you see the things that are good with that team. You know, Tage Thompson being one of them. You know, I watched the game last night, and I couldn't take my eyes off of Cousins. Like, he was just a menace.
You watch him on defense, though, in the other games?
Well, I understand. But,
yeah,
like, you can teach that a little bit, I think. I don't think you can teach that fearlessness around the net, right? And then, you know, look, Power and Paterka both get not scratched, but sat, benched. Like, that shouldn't be happening at this point. So, you know, it's hard when you lose 8 games in a row. I mean, the Rangers are going through the same thing. They just built up a big cushion before it happened. It's just really hard when you lose that many games, I think, on a number of levels, not only in the standings, but mentally and everything else. But I do think if there's somebody that's going to pull them out of it, it's going to be Lindy Ruff. I mean, he's been through it. He knows what it is, you know, and you know, it's a voice I think you have to listen to, but maybe I'm wrong.
Of these 8 games, 7 of them were at home, and they didn't win a single one of them. Like, that's almost unfathomable. Like, that's hard to do. So anyway, listen, that's my rant a little bit, if you will, on the Buffalo Sabres. Again, Mike Rupp will be joining us. Well, he joined us, so we'll have that interview shortly. But, Sean, before we get to that, there's another thing we can cover here. There's a lot of things we can cover. We cover a lot of Rangers with Rupp, so we didn't also cover the Blackhawks and their coaching change. By the way, congratulations. Anders Sorensen is the first Swedish head coach in the National Hockey League, so that's good for him. But did you see it coming? Did you see this one coming where do you think it's deserved? Well, maybe not deserved, but did you see it coming?
I saw that something had to happen. And you're not sure what it is because you start to see things in Chicago's game. And maybe the biggest thing is Bedard just losing his way, right? And the losing getting to him and mm-hmm. you know, the stick banging and the slump shoulders and everything. Like, that's your guy. Everything has to be done for him to be at his best. And he wasn't. And it didn't seem they could figure it out. And, you know, the new coach is a big development guy. He coached the Nylanders in Toronto when they were kids. And you know, William swears by him, you know, and gives him so much credit for the player that he is. You know, all through the minors, guys swear by him. So I think you had to do something. I don't think this is, let's change the coach and we're going to salvage our season and we're going to be, you know, we're going to climb up the standings. I think that's part of it. Everybody wants to win. But I just think that the atmosphere had to change.
You know, and think about it. They should be better based on some of the players that they have. I mean, Bedard, okay, he's a second-year player, and he's got 21 points in 28 games. You'd take that from a second-year player, but it hasn't been good, and there's frustration. We know that. But, like, they added Tara Vinen. He's a guy who's won in the past. They added Tyler Bertuzzi. He's got bite to his game. Jason Dickinson can play. You know, Taylor Hall can play, even though he's coming off of a major injury. You know, there's more talent there. And that's kind of the reason why I thought it could eventually come to this. It's not, yeah, you see the Bedard stuff and the frustration and the lack of taking that next step. And it's multiple steps we know that Connor Bedard has to take to get to the player he's going to be. But, you know, he's a generational guy. He's supposed to take him pretty fast, right? And he's not. But they added in the offseason to build around him a little bit. No one thought that they were a playoff team. No one thought they'd be close to a playoff team. But not a team that was just kind of lifeless. And that's, you know, that without much offense. And that's the thing, because when that goes on, that bleeds through the room in such a negative way. It bleeds through the fan base in such a negative way. The building becomes lifeless. All of those things happen. And I'm not pinning all of that on Luke Richardson, but because of all those things, it wasn't a surprise to me, you know, that it happened this way. And, this is still a long project there in Chicago, but again, it's one of those big markets, right, Sean? Like, you can't take forever to make this happen.
No, and it has to be about development. And so bringing a guy that's going to develop players, and I think you saw, you know, they beat the Rangers for the first win of the new regime, and, you know, you saw the players coming off the ice and there was a different feel to it. Like, there's nothing that beats winning. You can talk about culture all you want, and you can talk about development, and you can talk about all those things, but if there's not a tangible piece to it where you win at least every once in a while, it becomes really hard. Like, look, yeah, this is everybody's job, and they need to do their job. They get paid to do their job, but your job becomes a lot easier when you see some success.
Well, I'll give the Blackhawks credit. They got a better points percentage, as we talked today on Thursday, than the Nashville Predators, Sean. And that's a whole other story altogether.
Well, we're going to talk to Rupp in a minute. Their points percentage over the last 10 games has got to be pretty close to the Rangers.
Yeah. Well, and listen, that's true. The Rangers get a win in Buffalo. It's been ugly at Madison Square Garden. There's been a lot of stuff to go around, and, you know, we talked to Mike Rupp of the NHL Network about the Rangers, about the Penguins, in an interview we're going to play you right now. It's brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Here's Mike Rupp. Rupper, thanks so much for jumping on with us. And like I said, you were telling me, you know, off air, I guess we could say, that you're in Pittsburgh right now, and that Penguins are actually one of the topics I wanted to get to with you. So let's get right there. Okay. What are your thoughts on this team right now? I mean, are they a for real playoff contender? The standings say so, but are they? Do they play like one?
So the last couple weeks, I'll start with the answer. I'd say no. I don't think they're a playoff team for what we've seen so far. The last couple weeks have been way better. They look like they've started limiting some odd man rushes against. I mean, I'll be honest. The first probably I don't know, 15, 18 games. They were defending really poorly, severely. They're just and they weren't getting the saves. We know that as well. But I think a lot of that kind of coincided with one another as far as giving up some opportunities. They've cleaned that up a lot. They've gotten a boost from certain players like Philip Tomasino coming over in that deal from Nashville. Blake Lizotte has been fantastic, and he had those couple concussions that he missed some time at the beginning of the season. But I just still think they're going to get to a point where they can be in the hunt, but they also have Marcus Pettersson, who's a pending UFA. I think you're going to have to trade him at some point. He's your best defensive defenseman. So, I'd say that they're going to be a team that can certainly be in the mix, but I think for them to get in, they're going to need probably quite a bit of help from some other teams that just kind of fall apart in that same realm of grouping.
So you had the softball, and now I'm going to throw you a fastball. Is when we talk to you next year, will Sidney Crosby still be on the Penguins?
Man, you're brushing me back off the plate with that one.
Ooh.
The
Ooh.
I just I say yes. And it's not because I call Penguin games and work for them. I just genuinely know that he is not happy with the way things are going right now. But I think he wants to do everything in his power to be in Pittsburgh for his entire career. And I just don't know. I think what you're going to start seeing here, if I had to get the crystal ball out, would be at some point, I wonder what happens with Chris Letang. I wonder where that kind of goes. And then I wonder, is it, I think Evgeny Malkin just has next year is his last year. Now, when you start maybe losing some of the band, does that change Sid's thinking? I think next year he's still in Pittsburgh. Moving forward from there, I think he's seeing what kind of plays out here. And I think once players maybe start, if it gets to that, and if Chris Letang is moved, Evgeny Malkin probably either retires or does not come back as a Pittsburgh Penguin. That's where I think maybe he can he'll be at that fork in the road. But right now, I think he wants to see this thing through. I think he wants to do everything in his power to finish as a one team type player. And so I guess we'll just let the rumors kind of swirl as far as where he's going to go and if he's going to go.
I think you did a pretty good job of getting yourself back up and dusting yourself off and getting right back in there ready for a fastball. I don't know that this is a fastball that I'm going to give you, but I'm going to switch teams. So obviously the Jacob Trouba stuff all went down with the New York Rangers, and there's a lot to dive into there. But one thing from a player perspective I wanted to ask you about is, so this got out publicly over the summer that the Rangers were looking to move Jacob Trouba. And it really, he said it kind of cut his leadership ability. It cut it down. If you're a player in that room and you know you have a captain who comes into your room and the team doesn't want him to be there and is looking to move him, what's the reaction to the players? Because Jacob was saying that it was hard for him to lead. It was hard for him to be that. If it never came out publicly, it wouldn't have been. But everybody knew. So what's the reaction of the players then?
It's equivalent to me as sometimes we see when players have a letter or if it's a captain and you get scratched. If it's a one-time scratching just to get your game on track, but if you're figured to not really be part of the best lineup on a nightly basis, it clips your wings in the room. I didn't have a letter and I felt that in my career. I was a locker room guy, but it was really hard for me and it was never pressure. It wasn't ever players in the room. I don't think anybody on the New York Rangers was like, you're not even going to be here. I don't think that's the case. I think it's a good group of guys. And generally speaking, it's usually a good group. But you can't help but the human nature side of it clips your ability to lead and to do it vocally and to chime in at certain times. And it's something tough. It's tough. And I don't envy the position that he was in. And really that's a team that they're starving for leadership like that. They're starving for someone to say something or spark them or do something. I give him a ton of credit, even for his fight that he had with with Anderson in the Montreal game. Like, this guy was drugged through it, and he kept doing what he could do to lead this team and, quite frankly, put his face on the line in certain moments. It's a tough spot. It kind of clips your wings on what you can say and be in this, inside that locker room.
What fixes the Rangers?
I feel like there's a lot of suggestions, maybe, as far as I feel like, even going off the Jacob Trouba thing, and I've thought this for a couple of years now, and I don't know, Dan, if you and I have spoken about it or not, but this has been a really good team. We know this, President's Trophy winning team. I think the one thing that has always been a question mark for me is the lack of fire starter type players on their team. And certain moments where I feel like the best way for me to probably explain the Rangers, what I've thought of them the last couple of years, they can get sleepy at times. And whether it's a moment where Jacob Trouba's against the Blackhawks has to throw his helmet or have a big hit or whatever, it always seemed like it fell on the same guy or this. It just a great team as far as individually. I love their mentality, the chill group that they have. They seem very calm in certain situations. But not every player can be like that. You need some players that are going to stir it up a little bit, whether it's physically on the ice, in the locker room. I'm not in the locker room, but it's like you're always waiting for a spark to happen. And when that team is allowed to play the way they want to play, they can snap the puck around and look like the Globetrotters out there. Like, they are loaded. They're good. They got a phenomenal goaltender. But my concern was always when it's not easy for them, can they fight through? Can they find ways to grab momentum back? And I thought that that's something they've lacked. And the two players that I thought can help in that regard are not there any longer. So it's fine that that's part of the decision-making moving forward. I maybe even agree in some standpoints about moving on, but what's the backup plan? Who in that room now? And I don't want to always go back to, some people are going to roll their eyes. I'm going to bring up Matt Rempe's name. And I'm not saying he's the answer.
Sean's rolling his eyes.
I'm not saying he's the answer for anything right now, but I think and I don't want to discredit what he did last year, but I think the Rangers team, the fan base, they're starving for something like that. And I don't mean even like that, a big monster that's going to go around and running everybody and fighting. Just they want pushback. The team is starving for it. And last year it came in the likes of Matt Rempe. This year he's been outplayed. Edstrom's been, he's deserved his spot in this lineup, and there's not really a spot for Matt Rempe right now. Well, that doesn't mean you don't need that type of attribute in your lineup. I just feel like this is something that they're lacking. They have for a couple years, and whenever they get into a problem in a situation, it's like I feel like everyone sits on their hands and they're looking around to see who's going to do something.
Yeah. So you're saying they need Brady Tkachuk. I'm just kidding.
Most part. Yes, exactly.
Obviously, that one is out there. That's a whole other thing. I don't know why Ottawa actually would move him. But, you know, because Ottawa needs a player like that and something more as well. But you brought up the goalie. Just in general. I mean, obviously, Igor Shesterkin gets the big contract, $11.5 million per eight-year deal. What are your thoughts on paying a goalie that much?
I'm not really for that. I could be dead wrong with it. I think up until last year, you go back to Vasi. Vasi signed his deal, his big deal, I guess, a year before they won their first cup. So that was probably the first one. Bob's last year was kind of the other big one. But I think that I'm a big Sergei Bobrovsky guy. I love what he does. I think people are very quick to forget that was a really bad contract until the playoffs last year. And even over the stretch where there was times where you didn't know if he was going to be the goalie. And even the year before that was the Alex Lyon kind of saved their season to get him in the playoffs. So I love Bob. I think they've gotten to the point where they built a phenomenal team around them that plays the right way to be able to, kind of have a goalie making that much, but I don't believe in the goaltending position to earn that much money as far as the salary cap goes. I mean, does that mean that Igor Shesterkin isn't worth it? No, he's their best player. And people are like, well, why wouldn't you pay your best? I just don't find that formula to work. That's just kind of where I'm at. Maybe I'm spoiled because I had Marty Brodeur making $5 million every year for, it seemed like ever. And it was a non-salary cap world also, so that didn't really matter. But I just find that in a salary cap world and in some of the seasons that we've seen from other goaltenders that have won the Stanley Cup, that there seems to be a better way of doing it, especially when this Rangers team, I didn't touch on that. I don't think they defend well at all. So the argument, you get one side to say, well, that shows that he deserves that. Yeah, it does. But you're going to have to ask Igor Shesterkin to be Vezina caliber every game, every night, for 16 wins in the playoffs. That's a lot to ask for anybody. I'd like to see that money kind of spent somewhere else and make the team where Igor can be good on some nights and they could still win.
So the opposite of that is happening in Toronto, right? You have Wall, who's a rookie-ish, trying to find his way through some injuries, and you have Stolarz, who's Bob's backup last year and helped them win the cup, but has never been a number one. And right now, they're one of the best teams in the league with that duo. Do you think it lasts?
That's the big question. I mean, it looks phenomenal right now. I think it lasts because you've got two guys going. I think that Earley's gives you the best chance at it lasting. I mean, that's a pretty obvious statement, but they've got a good thing going. And I think that they have played better in front of those goaltenders. And that's what gives me, like, Stolarz against the Devils the other night. Incredible. I mean, what a performance that was. On most nights, Anthony Stolarz is not asked to do that. Now, if he was, I would say, no, this is not going to last for either goaltender. But these are good goaltenders. Joseph Wall, like you mentioned, he's the future guy there. Stolarz has been around a long time, getting an opportunity he hasn't really had before. So I guess the way that they're insulated in some regards with their team on most nights, yeah, I think it can last. They've got a lot of good things. I'm actually... This is so strange for me because I have been probably one of the most anti-Leafs guy over the last number of years through this whole era of the core four. I think it could be different this spring. I don't know why I feel that way. I just watching the games, it feels different. I don't need to see them tic-tac-toeing teams to death. I could see a game like that, and I almost even pull the positives out of a game like that New Jersey game. How they won that game is incredible to me. They've shown that they are able and kind of willing in some regards to have those types of games once in a while and come out on top.
Well, I mean, isn't that the Berube effect too, or at least part of Craig Berube's impact on this team because of the style of play and the style of coach that he is? And it's not to disparage a Sheldon Keefe or, you know, who obviously led the Leafs to a lot of regular season success and got them a playoff series win, but it's more along the lines of, I think Sean said it a couple of weeks ago on this podcast, you know, they're playing playoff hockey, like, you know, their style, meaning, you know, they're playing that style. We really haven't seen that from the Leafs, and that's why it's been so hard for them. But do you agree? I mean, is that the Berube effect?
I think it has to be. But they also have had, I like the personnel moves they've made. Chris Tanev is one where, man, I hate to think this way because I want every player to be healthy forever, but it's like you sit there and you saw the way he plays in the playoffs and the way he was even in Dallas. It's like at some point, I feel like this guy's body is just going to fall apart. Like and the fact that he's back here and he's doing this year, I mean, they had him in when they're healthy and they've got Tanev and McCabe. That's something personnel-wise they have not had. I couldn't recall a time where the Leafs have a shutdown tandem that they could throw out there. And also take some of this off Morgan Rielly's plate. He's a hell of a defenseman, but I've always thought that they've asked him to do too much. And so now all of a sudden the back end's built a little more. And I mean, I sit here and watch OEL and watched him in the playoffs. And I remember talking to Jason Demers about it. They obviously played together in Arizona. And my evaluation of OEL over the years, from playing against him to just watching him, his game has really changed in a lot of ways. He's had to change it, but he's got a mean streak to him now. Like, I think OEL's hard to play against now. And the old way OEL was hard to play against was he was hanging on to the puck. He was offensive. He was jumping. You had to keep your head on. Well, now I think he's still capable of doing some of those things. Maybe not to the level he once was, but he defends really hard. Like, he's the son of a, you know what, out there on the ice. And we saw it in the playoffs. So my point being, I think this Leafs D-core got stronger. They got meaner. They got more defensively oriented. And I think it's really helped. But Craig Berube has got to rally all these things together. I thought he's done an incredible job so far.
Mike, I don't know if this would have happened to you, but do you believe that at some point, you know, you were just talking about OEL and how his game changed and how, to me, the core four's games have changed. Does there come a point in a player's career where he realizes, hey, stats are nice, but that's not why I'm here? Like, it feels to me like that's what Toronto was for years. And people kept on saying, well, you got to win in the playoffs. And they were like, yeah, next year, I'm going to put up these points. I'm going to do this. And now all of a sudden, it seems like everybody's on the same page. And it almost seems like it's just kind of clicked over the summer where they all said, oh my God, it's getting away from us.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I can't speak from their standpoint because obviously they're a different caliber player than I was. I have seen some great players that I think just eventually have had enough. They've had enough of doing it. I don't want to say doing it their way, because that would allude that these guys are just hard-headed and never wanted to adjust and aren't coachable. And I don't think that's the case. I think these guys are guys that I think are just finally saw that we believe in this group, but we believe it's got to be, we're seeing now it's got to be done differently. And I wonder how much of that takes some pressure off of them. I mean, I don't know now the way this team's built. I don't know if Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, the core four, if they are completely measured on the stat sheet every night. I think it feels like watching this Leafs team, at least the way I look at them now, is did they win? You know what I mean? Like, I've always thought that there was always had to be those guys being great. And those guys are great on most nights, but I don't think they're called to be lights out every single night. So I think of it almost with a great comp in some regards, even though he still was kind of youngish in the league, was Sidney Crosby back in 2009. They win the Stanley Cup. I was not on the team then. I came to the team that summer. And all I heard within that organization was, and that was, I think it's pretty well documented, that was the summer where Sid said, I want to score more goals. He kind of tweaked his blade a little bit. He scored 50 the next year. He also said, I want to be better at faceoffs. And I remember that next season we took faceoffs all the time after practice, and Sid would be out there slugging away with us. And just, you do that every single day. I mean, it hurts. Like, it's a lot to do. And we were doing it all the time. And he was dialed in and doing it. And the reason why I bring this up is I heard that during that 2009 run, they had Craig Adams. He was the defensive centerman that would take the defensive draws. Sid, even though they just won the Stanley Cup, it ate him up that he wasn't out there to protect a lead late in the game. And I think that changed the course of his career in a lot of ways, because now we revere him as being one of the better shutdown centermen. When need be, he can do all different things. But that is my point, is that he saw and he had enough. And not he had enough. Craig Adams did a hell of a job. They won the Stanley Cup. But right. He wanted to be that guy. I think the core four are starting to understand, we want to win. Like, that's above anything else. Above us, our fashion and all that stuff we do in Toronto. I think these guys genuinely want to win now, and I think we're starting to see some sacrifices made in their game.
We'll see. I mean, I think that they can. Sean, what were you were about to say something too?
Well, I was just going to ask Mike what it's like to own a Hall of Famer in the faceoff dot until he figured it out.
Yeah, so I was a big reason why Sid's so good at face. No, Sid would, you know, we'd sit in there, but he, it's really funny too, because you watch him and everything you're taught. Just a fun little side note. You watch, what, can you ever go back and watch Mario taking draws? Everything you're taught to do as a centerman, he did not do, but he was pretty good at taking draws. Like, he was never over the circle. He was always at the end of his stick. He'd stand pretty straight up, and he would just time it so good and just kind of boop on his forehand and put it back. Watch Sid on his forehand. I wonder, I'm going to ask him one of these days if he ever watched Mario or Mario gave him any tips, because on his backhand, he's a little different. On his forehand, he just kind of like, it looks very effortless. Like, he doesn't care, but he's pretty good at winning them. I find it pretty spectacular. But again, that whole story was just the greats, the all-time greats, they don't get there by just having great skill. They have great work ethic, and they go back to the shop and they work on their game.
You know, and this is the last one for me, Mike, but bringing it full circle back to where we started, right, with the Penguins. And you were just talking about Sidney Crosby. And I was at the Island. They were skating at UBS Arena. And this was a couple of weeks ago. I've mentioned this on the podcast before. And they had a practice day before a game, travel day. And the last two guys on the ice were Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang. And I'm talking like guys were dressed and changed. New guys dressed and changed and heading to the bus when Sid was coming off the ice. And that's what you're talking about, right? I mean, right there is the exact example of what you're talking about. And to me, it was like shocking, because I'm, why is anybody leaving the ice if this guy is still out on the ice working?
So the you led me into this right with that last thing you said. I will be the old man yelling at the clouds. Oh, back in the day, it used to be like this. And I'm going to say that, because why on God's green earth, if you're a player, right, that's trying to make it in the league, get a name for yourself, maybe you get a second chance opportunity in Pittsburgh here, why the hell would you ever allow that to happen? Those guys are on the ice. I'm going to go pretend I'm doing something. I at least want the optics that I'm just going
watch.
To be
just, just
or watch them. Exactly. Or go down there or ask them to be a part of whatever. Exactly. And I know maybe this is just an isolated incident where you saw nobody else out there, but these two guys, I think to your point, are the guys that stay on the ice. Sid goes out early. He's off late. He puts in the work. That's one thing that I sometimes the league now frustrates me with that. This isn't by chance. And just because you made it doesn't mean you're going to stay. And I want to see more of that. And with those two guys on the ice, everybody should be on the ice till those two guys leave the ice. That's for sure.
Mike, this was great. We're going to stay on the podcast after you leave it, but you were the star. There's no doubt about it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on, and look forward to chatting with you guys again here soon.
That interview was brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Great stuff there with Mike Rupp. Just, he does a great job. And by the way, we were off air, I guess, again, like I could say, we were talking... Rupper and I were talking about his Marriott points, Sean. He's big with the Marriott points. He's got the Marriott card. I told him now he's a full-fledged member of the media because he's all about the Marriott points. So good for him.
Yeah, it's a whole different world when you're traveling commercially and you're not you're not traveling with the team. So good luck with that. He's got some catching up to do, but I think he'll be all right. You know, it's so awesome to have Mike on, because he sees the game in a different way than I think a lot of people do. Plus, he's way more famous than he comes off as. He scored a Stanley Cup winning goal.
That's it. He did.
There's not a lot of those guys.
Nope.
And we don't know many of them.
Nope. I don't know that we've ever had one on.
So we got him in our Rolodex, yeah, as the definitely. Old men say.
Yeah, he did. 2003 Stanley Cup winner. And I wanted to ask him about the Jacob Trouba and the leadership and whatnot, but we didn't really dive into the trade. So that obviously happened. There's so much behind that trade. You know, we can go, well, we could dive really deep into that, Sean, and have a long conversation. I don't know that we have the time or want to do that, but the Rangers did finally pull the trigger and make the trade, getting rid of Jacob Trouba, sending him to Anaheim. He
for Urho Vaakanainen and a draft pick that comes back to the Rangers. Vaakanainen's a defenseman, and, you know, we'll see. But it was more along the lines of shedding $8 million and getting rid of Jacob Trouba, $8 million for next season and the rest of this season. And the Ducks took it all, Sean, which I think is the biggest win for the Rangers if you're going to do this trade, is the fact that they opened up all this cap space. But Jacob talked about it. He said the threat of waivers was used against him, Sean, and I addressed this in my weekly mailbag. It's the right of the New York Rangers to use it. It's within the CBA. We may not like it. Players may not like it, but unless it's addressed in the CBA, Sean, the Rangers have that ability to threaten waivers to guys who have no movement, to have no trade clauses.
Yeah, look, there's all different tools in the toolbox, right? And some of them you don't want to use. Some of them are gentle. Some of them are blunt force objects. And those deals, like, that's what he agreed to. And none of those deals are done in a vacuum. So you're giving things to get things. But it's a little hard, I think, to look at and to say, oh, well, because I think as a player, you're like, well, what does my contract say?
Mm-hmm.
What's next for me? And the other thing, and I'll ask you this because you're the Ranger guy. You go there every day. Are they a better team today than they were last week? You
no.
See, you had to think about it too long.
They're not.
And will they be? Will they, as they are constructed right now, will they be a better playoff team than they were last year?
I don't know yet. As they're constructed right now, no.
Yeah,
no.
They're not even close. Their best player in the playoffs.
Playoff team right now. As
their best player in the playoffs is Barkley Goodrow. He was waived.
Yeah. Yep.
I thought Jacob Trouba was not the problem in the playoffs last year.
No. I don't think he was a big-time help, but I don't think he was a big problem. No, there were other issues, for sure. And you're right about Barkley Goodrow. He was a machine scoring goals for them. He was terrific for them. And they just didn't want him on the hook for another three more years, and they pulled the waivers with him too. They threatened the waivers with Trouba. No, they're not. As they're currently constructed right now, they are not a better team without Jacob Trouba. And to be honest with you, if it wasn't so mushy around them, I think they wouldn't even be a playoff team the way it is. And maybe they're not a playoff team. You know, maybe a team like the Penguins jumps up. Maybe a team like the Islanders. Maybe a team like the Flyers or the Blue Jackets. You know, like, or do the Sabres just lose eight in a row? Or do they go win eight in a row and figure it out and jump ahead of them, right? There's a number of different teams. They've put themselves in this position. They're not. But if they hang around the way that they think they will be able to, then they'll be able to upgrade their roster because they got a lot of cap space. And that's the best thing to come out of this move.
Dan, what's the middle like in the NHL?
I am not going to say it again. I think I've said it twice.
You said it more than twice. So,
I'm not going to say it again.
They're not the only team that made a trade this week. The Colorado Avalanche are just going to keep trading for goalies. It's like fantasy hockey, right? Like, you're like, you know what? This guy's got a better goals against average. Let's go get him. And I don't think that's the case. I think they're done now. At least for a little while. But a former Ranger there, right? And Gorgiev. Stars falling pretty quickly for somebody who won as many games as he did last year. To be completely out of favor is almost shocking.
I mean, an .874 save percentage this season, a 3.38 goals against average this season, that'll run you right out of favor pretty quickly for a team that wants to win the Stanley Cup. And a team that, by the way, was in the top 10, I believe, in high danger scoring chances against. Like, they were low. They're not giving up a ton. They're not. And their goalies couldn't, between Georgiev and Anunin, they couldn't stop much. And have we ever seen this? A team in December, a Stanley Cup contending team, or a team that we believe should be a Stanley Cup contender, completely changed the look of their goaltending. They traded their two guys and they added two guys. Blackwood and Wedgwood come in, Georgiev and Anunin come out. And don't get me wrong, I think they're way better with Blackwood and Wedgwood. I do.
You do?
I do. I think they're way better. I think Mackenzie Blackwood has never, that I can remember,
played on a team that can defend well. He just had a 9-11 save percentage with the San Jose Sharks. They're not a great defensive team. They play hard, right? But there's a lot of young guys in that lineup. There's a lot of guys in that lineup that, you know, we're going to try to push for a little bit of offense. He had a 9-11 save percentage with them, and he won six games. I think Blackwood's a better goalie than Georgiev. I do. I think Georgiev has always thought too highly of himself. He thought he was better than Shesterkin. He thought he was better than Lundqvist. And good for him, because you're a professional. You should think you're the best, right? That's the confidence you should have. But it never really played out that way. And I think Wedgwood is just a more experienced backup than Anonen, and has proven so far in a very short span to be quite good for the Colorado Avalanche. He's got two shutouts already. He's got three wins already. I mean, I think they're better off with Blackwood and Wedgwood than they were with Georgiev. And Anonen, if for no other reason, then I don't think the guys there believed in Georgiev and Anonen anymore. And that's a hard thing.
How many playoff wins do those two players have?
Oh, did Wedgwood? No, you're right. I mean, the playoff wins, no. But
they don't even have a playoff start.
What has Georgiev done in the playoffs?
He's played in them.
So? Has he played well in them?
They don't have a. They're a Stanley Cup team that doesn't have a goalie with a start in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
No, it's not ideal. But when you don't have, when you go into the season without a true number one, this is where you're going to be.
And you know what? And you know what else Blackwood didn't have when he was in San Jose? You can talk about him not having a good defense. He also didn't have any expectations.
True.
None. Zero. Zilch. That's not the case anymore.
No, he's got it. But eventually you got to be able to play with them. Eventually you have, if you're a goalie that thinks you're a number one in the NHL and Blackwood does, well, eventually you're gonna have to prove it. Well, here's his chance. Here's the opportunity. Go.
Yeah, great for him.
Prove it. Do it. I mean, unless. There's so how many teams are we were just talking about the Los Angeles Kings, Sean. Do they have a number one? Darcy Kemper won the Stanley Cup with the Avalanche. I'll give you that, right? But he's not the same goalie. He was never elite. David Rittich, no, right? There's a lot of teams that their biggest question mark when they go into the playoffs might be goaltending. And Colorado has a chance, and it's going to be a question regardless if they get into the playoffs because those guys have no playoff experience. But at least now there's a runway for Mackenzie Blackwood, who we are assuming is the number one now, Mackenzie Blackwood to build up a resume that would make you believe he can carry it into the playoffs.
When's the last time a team that we question their goaltending going into the playoffs made it to the final?
The Avalanche?
I don't know. Kemper was pretty good that year.
The Oilers?
He was an all-star.
The Vegas Golden Knights?
Maybe.
The last three. It's the last 3 years. You know, and this actually goes back to Rupper's point about Shesterkin. And listen, I think the Rangers had to pay him. I think that they were just in that situation where, you know, they couldn't let him walk. I mean, you know, you got to do it. And the cap goes up and that you hope, you know, for them that it all works out. Certainly worked out for Shesterkin. But why can't Mackenzie Blackwood go win in the playoffs? He's got a really good team in front of him when healthy. They have not been healthy this season either, okay? That team's been battered this season. But it's just, to me, what it is just amazing that you remake your goaltending like this in December. But on the other side of this, good for Mike Greer and the San Jose Sharks. They got a pretty good deal out of this. You know, like, they traded a guy who is not their future number one goaltender. That's Askarov. They acquired him already. And they're waiting him out, and they're developing him, right? So they get a guy in Georgiev who can close the season with them. There's no expectations there. Same thing with Vanecek, but they get Kovalenko, and maybe he's becomes a part of
this team as it moves forward. He's 25 years old. He's a rookie. Maybe he becomes, you know, a middle six guy for them for the next several seasons. They got a second round pick, which is just another piece of asset, another asset that they can have. They got a fifth round pick, another asset for a guy who, like you said, whatever he did this season wasn't really going to make much of a difference. Their goalie is Askarov. That's their future guy. And they probably weren't re-signing Blackwood because he doesn't want to go and be a number two in San Jose or have to compete to be a number one. He thinks he's a number one. So I think it's a great deal for the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, I think any deal is a great deal for the San Jose Sharks because there's no expectations. I really think you have to look through it through the lens of the Colorado Avalanche, and anybody who's listened to this podcast for a long time knows if anybody's going to bang the drum for the Colorado Avalanche, it's me. And they're playing decent, but it's really hard when you go into the playoffs and you think about this team and who they're going to have to go against, who's going to be 200 feet across from them. I don't like their chances that often.
Well, it's December 12th, so let's wait it out a little bit. But this leads me to a question for you that I wanted to ask you. Who's the best team? It's December 12th. Who's the best team in the National Hockey League? The fact you don't have an answer right away is telling to me, and I'm the same way. I don't know.
I think it's the Florida Panthers.
So you have Minnesota number one this week in the Super 16.
Yep.
And I have the Washington Capitals number one this week in the Super 16. Minnesota two. Why can't argue with either one of them, I don't think, for the point we're at in the season. But then I look. The Panthers are 6-0-1 in their past seven games. The Edmonton Oilers are 6-1 in their past seven. The Vegas Golden Knights are 7-1-1 in their past nine. Sean, I think that's the three best teams in the league.
Yeah, and I think I would put Vegas against Florida. Like, I think Florida's beaten Edmonton again.
Yeah.
And because there's nothing to suggest that they wouldn't. And I think they beat both Washington and Minnesota.
Agree.
Come playoffs, I don't know if they beat them right now. Right. So, and that's why Minnesota's at the top for me. Like, I haven't liked the game that Florida's played until, again, very recently. But, you know, I've made this argument a number of times. But if we're talking about, like, I guess the difference would be who's the best team right now and who would you pick to win the cup? And I guess they're two different things. Like, I think the Minnesota Wild, they're playing the best hockey right now. I think the Florida Panthers would win the cup.
It's funny because the LA Kings, and I put the Wild at two, and I have the Kings at four in the Super 16, but the Kings just beat them 4-1 on Saturday. The Kings are playing great too, but I wouldn't put the Kings anywhere near it.
No.
You know? They would be nowhere near it for me. That goes back to what I was saying earlier, and it's just, the reason I brought it up is it's funny to me because the last two Stanley Cup champions and the team that went to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final last year, I look at, and look at how they're starting to play now, right? Oh, my goodness, what was happening to Edmonton at the start of the year? What's happening? Oh, my God, right? Florida went through a dry spell, you know, coming out of the Global Series, and Maurice was talking about it's his fault that they're slumping and this, that, and the other. And, you know, Vegas has kind of been pretty steady all the way through, so I don't think we can say anything about that. At no point in this season ever did I think I'd have the Washington Capitals number one, let alone probably in the top five. But they're one for me this week. And this is a team that's played really well. You know, like the Washington Capitals right now are they don't have Alex Ovechkin, Sean, and they're 6-0-1 in their past seven games. It's all without Ovechkin. They've beaten the Devils. They've beaten the Lightning. They've beaten the Panthers. So they're one, but probably 7 or 8 when you look at teams and say who's best in the league overall, right?
Yeah, neither one of us have talked about the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, I did in my mailbag.
Well, of course you did. Because you're way ahead of it. But they were the almost universal number one for a long time, except for one guy. I don't remember who that guy was who said that they weren't the best team in the league, but he might have been a little smart, but who knows? It's all in the past. Who really cares?
The Panthers that week at number one, by the way. You didn't have the Wild that week. You're right. Yeah, slow down here. All right.
That was when the Winnipeg Jets were universal. Oh, they're the best team. They can't be beat. Oh, they're so awesome. And I think they are awesome, and I think they're a really good team, and I think they're built for the playoffs. And if Connor Hellebuyck has a better series, then it's a totally different story for them. You know, I think if they play Colorado again, and maybe it's a different story. But they hadn't been tested. I think that's exactly what I told you when we talked about it, is they got off to such a good start, they never had any adversity.
Yeah, we did talk about that.
And they don't know how to deal with it because they didn't have to. And now they have. They're what, 2-6 in their last eight? They put a pretty good pace in on the Boston Bruins last night or two nights ago, 8-1. And that was really the first time the Bruins have looked bad defensively since they made their coaching switch. But now they're dealing with some adversity, and I think it'll help them in the long run. But I also think it exposed some of their warts.
Well, it clearly has. You got to remember, when they got off to that 15-1 start, they were healthy, number one. They had 11 forwards playing all 16 of those games. They had 5 defensemen playing all 16. In fact, they had 11 forwards playing 16 and another forward who played in 15. So they were healthy at that for a pretty long stretch there. Their power play was clicking. It was over 42%. And they were playing great, right? They were below, and I wrote about this in my mailbag, Sean, they were below 50% in shot attempts percentage. So that is an indication that maybe regression was going to happen, and it has. And they've also gotten some injuries. Sandberg's out. Ehlers is out. All these things were bound to happen. So the question I got in the mailbag was, which Jets team is this? Is it the team that started 15-1, or is it the team that's, well, at the time I got the question, 5-8 in their last 13, but now 6-8 in their last 13? Somewhere in the middle probably, right?
Maybe they're in the mushy middle.
I didn't say it. You said it this time.
Yeah. Look, the thing that happens, and look,
they're
we all get
caught. They're above that, by the way.
We all get caught up in hot streaks and wins and everything else. But what this league does is it humbles you. And it humbles you because men are paid to figure out what your weaknesses are and exploit them. Right? And that's why the Stanley Cup playoffs are so unbelievable, because everybody's identified your weaknesses and they're trying to exploit them. And the team with the fewest weaknesses generally wins. So when Winnipeg got off to a really hot start, there are really smart guys all around the league that started looking at the Winnipeg Jets and saying, how do we beat them? And they put their minds together and they figured out how to beat them. And there's a game plan on how to beat them. And they figured out what their weaknesses are. And now it's Winnipeg's job to say, okay, it's their time to self-scout and say, okay, here's where we're losing our advantage. We need to fix this. So they're not the 15-1 team, but I don't know that they're the 6-8 team. And that's 14 games, by the way, Dan, not 13.
Well, I'm saying the question was asked when they were 5-8. The question was asked before the 8-1 win against Boston. By the way, there are times where I believe that you are paid to exploit, to find my weaknesses and exploit.
No, it's just a hobby. I don't get paid.
Oh, you're paid, and you're paid well. Listen, this was a lot of fun, Sean. By the way, the NHL is partnering with iHeart for the NHL Unscripted podcast with Adnan Burke and Jason Demers. So after you're done listening to this podcast, go listen to that one wherever you get your podcasts. And we should have Mike Rupp on again, right, Sean? Next week.
Maybe he can take over for me. He'll be nicer to you.
And I'll learn more, too.
Well,
that's even better for me. This is great for me.
You might be knowledgeable by the end of the year.
I could be. Absolutely. This was fun. As always, the NHL At The Rink podcast is brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.